Good morning, United Church. My name is Charles Fisher. I'm one of the team members here at United and have been since our launch. And I just want to introduce myself a little bit. If you don't know who I am, you might have seen me up here hosting from time to time. I'm generally known as the coffee guy. If you've seen us out at the Metro Center or at events, I'm standing there brewing coffee. That's kind of my thing around here. I like to brew coffee. I like good coffee. I went to school straight out of high school into a college for going into ministry, and that's what I wanted to do straight out of high school. I knew that I wanted to work with people and be able to share the gospel message with people, and so I went to school. That's where I met my wife, who we got married while we were still in school, and then we've moved to Illinois and Indianapolis and then back to Maryland, where we knew we wanted to serve in Maryland. We were East Coasters. When we went to the Midwest for a little while, we knew that wasn't cut out for us, and we were East Coast people. We needed to come back and work here. And so we come here today, and we have lots of just questions and concerns. And, you know, a little bit about more about me is that I've never walked in a room and thought I was the smartest guy, and I just don't like debating. I don't like to debate. It's just not my thing. If you want to talk to me about things I'm passionate about, man, I love talking about stuff. You'll probably never get me to shut up. If you get me talking about our trips and our travels or coffee, you might just think, oh my goodness, stop talking. But I get passionate about things, but I don't like to debate things. It's just not my thing. I've never felt like that was a necessity. I just don't like that argumentative, like, oh, this, that, one of us has to be right. And I'm often the guy that thinks when somebody always has to be right, you know, the know-it-all in the room, I often sit back and go, oh, you're a clever guy. Like, you like to be the clever guy. And so when I think about debates, there was a debate about 3 years ago that was really, really important to our culture and society, and it was all over social media. Families were being torn apart by this. People were ripping people apart. How many times this was hashtagged and talked about? Man, this thing tore people apart. Dinner table conversations got heated over this one thing, and I want to know if you can help me here, but it was whether this dress, all right, this dress, the color of this dress, it split families apart. Does anybody know about the dress? The dress. All right, you know. All right, so the question was, is it white and gold or blue and black? All right, so who says white and gold? Let me hear white gold people. All right, what about black and blue people? All right, so there's a little bit of both. Kind of, nobody's really passionate about it. You're like, I'm done with this. This is so 3 years ago. And so it's okay. That's all right. But this was a huge debate. People were like fighting over it. And I look at it, and I still don't understand. It's white and gold to me. But the makers of the dress came out, and they swear this original photo of this original dress was a black and blue dress. They swear by it. I still don't see it. But then they eventually made a white and gold version of it to like sell for charity and stuff. And it became this whole thing. Like, this was a big debate. And it's kind of silly. And so we debate about different things, and there's all kinds of stuff that we just dig into and we hold sides to, and we just, our side is right, right? Our side is right. Nobody else could be right. And so we have this idea of just, there's a tension there. When you have a right, true answer and somebody else is not quite there, you guys can't agree. And so there's this tension that creates. And our culture is this whole melting pot culture, where it's not just silly things about dresses and about, you know, foods or restaurants, but we debate about deeper things. We debate about religion. We debate about politics. We debate about eternal life or life on this earth. And we just start debating about all kinds of things. And so in our melting pot society is when we start to say, okay, all this stuff just comes together and we just accept it all. Because we're melting pot. You just pour it in, right? You're making a big pot of soup. You just keep adding stuff. And it all just becomes part of what it is. And the central claim around Christianity comes down to one of these. The central claim about Christianity is maybe the most controversial in modern times, and it's the claim that Christ alone connects humankind back to God. That he is the exclusive means of salvation. The only way to heaven, the only way for peace, the only way for ultimate joy in life, and that no other religion or worldview can provide these things. And many people find this extremely offensive. They find it extremely offensive. There was an article written in a Canadian newsletter, a Canadian a magazine, and the whole article ran a poll about, like, how Canadian are you? And so there was this whole thing about people and religions and who they want to hang out with or who they don't want to hang out with. And when it came out, it said that 30% of people in Canada would rather never hang out with a Christian. Never hang out with a Christian. The same percentages were related to child molesters and drug dealers. They wouldn't want to hang out with Christians just as much as they wouldn't want to hang out with a drug dealer or a child abuser, because they see us as bigoted people who don't want to talk about how other people feel or what other religions look like. They just are instantly looking at us saying, nope, they have the right way, and that's just so wrong. And it comes from really years of the church kind of messing it up. To be really honest, it comes from years of people feeling that way, you know, because good-hearted people want to tell people about Jesus, and they want to show, hey, this is the way to God, this is the way to God, and unintentionally have created a culture within the church that says, anybody else outside of that, we just don't even want to talk to you, or we can't relate to you, or we can't get along with you. Not that this is the case in every church, but it's been happening, and it has happened over the years, and it leaves a bad taste in our mouth when we think about the idea that somebody could claim that we have one way to salvation, one way. And so far in this series, as we've talked about things, we've looked at, why did God have to kill his only son? Did Jesus really have to die? How can we prove that Jesus was raised from the dead? And is the Bible reliable? We've looked at all these really tough questions. And if you've missed any of those, I want to point you back to United On Demand. We have it on our website. You can check that out and go back and re-listen to those and be able to hear those, because some of those are really important with what we're talking about today. When we talk about Jesus being the only way, we're going to mention the fact that Scripture is reliable, and we're going to talk about the fact that Jesus did have to die for salvation. But this centralized theme, it doesn't set well with people, and in all reality, it doesn't set well with other Christians either. There's a part of us that wrestles with turmoil here that just doesn't understand it. The truth is that the notion of exclusivity, the idea that we could have some exclusive way to salvation, it doesn't set well with any good Christian either, because it's hard. We look around our world, our melting pot society, and we see beautiful people of different cultures, of different faiths, of different races, and we look at all this and we're like, how could a God say that somebody would be excluded from a relationship with him and with salvation from him? We ask ourselves, how can God really say that? How could that be what we really believe? How could that be it? And we worry about it. We struggle with it. And we should, because we want people to get along. We want people to be a part of something. We want people to see salvation. And so when we see people not receiving it, we get upset. We get frustrated. And there's a tension within us. Not just people outside of the church looking at us, but there's a tension here within us. There's a tension that just says, oh, this doesn't sit well. So day in and day out, I see beautiful people in different faiths and convictions. Even our church here at United, we are sending a group to Rwanda, and they're going to see different faith groups. They're going to see different people of different thoughts. And they're going to look around in that trip, and they're going to look around, and they're going to go, wow, I love these people. And they're going to be heartbroken if they aren't following the way. There's going to be a heartbreak there. There's a great movie, maybe like one of the top in, movie cinema studies, where people, you might just, if you ever took cinema classes, I'm sure this would be number one of a movie you'd watch to make sure you studied. And that is Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, right? This is high class cinema right here. It's at its finest, movie going experience. And there's a couple different things in this movie that are pretty silly when it comes to all this idea. One is that they sit down for a dinner table conversation, and they're about to pray, and they each argue about, who they pray to. And there's a prayer of like, dear baby Jesus. And they're like, well, I don't pray to baby Jesus. And he's like, no, I pray to 9-pound, 8-ounce baby Jesus. And so there's a debate even among people. That's another thing that the church has done. There's churches that disagree on so many things, people look at it and they're like, the churches can't even get it together. And so then we have this idea of other faiths and religions. And Ricky Bobby, there's a scene, he crashes his car and he thinks he's on fire. Okay, so let's see. He thinks he's on fire. He's not on fire, but he thinks he's on fire. And he's running around, and this guy runs around and he says a whole bunch of things. He says, help me, Jesus. Help me, Jewish God. Help me, Allah. Help me, Tom Cruise. Use your witchcraft on me to get the fire off of me. Help me, Oprah Winfrey. And he's just screaming, rolling around, like, just help me, help me. And what he's doing is hedging his bets. And that is the melting pot philosophy that is inclusivism, where everything is just true and something's got to be right. Something's got to be true. Everything's truth. And it's a flawed system. Hedging your bets, grasping at straws, anything I'm just going to grab at. There's a lot of people that would talk badly about any idea that an exclusive claim to salvation is right. There's a quote from a rabbi that says, I'm absolutely against any religion that says one faith is superior to another. And here's where that gets deeper. He says, I don't see how it's any different than spiritual racism. Mahatma Gandhi said, my position is that all great religions are fundamentally equal. And one of the biggest, most respected theologians of all time, the one we turn to for all of our wisdom and guidance, Oprah Winfrey, says, one of the biggest mistakes that humans make is to believe there's only one way. Actually, there are many diverse paths leading to God. This idea of inclusivism, where everything is right, the basic premise is that all religions are true, or at least partially true, and they all have value, and our culture is considered anyone who thinks outside of that is narrow-minded or bigoted if they don't believe anything else. They just, everything has to be true, and we cannot exclude anybody else. But here's the deal. Just because something doesn't feel right doesn't mean that it's wrong. Just because something doesn't feel right doesn't mean it's wrong. If my son woke up every morning, which he does, and asks for fruit snacks for breakfast, which he does, and I, you know, have a conversation with him every day because we can't have fruit snacks for breakfast, he'll even rationalize, well, it's fruit snacks. And so, you know, and he'll just rationalize it. And every day he asks for fruit snacks. I know that that's not what you should do. I know that you shouldn't eat fruit snacks, but it doesn't set well with him. It doesn't set well with him that he can't have fruit snacks for breakfast every day. And we have this whole argument about it every day until we fix him something else. If he had his way, it'd be fruit snacks for breakfast, pizza for dinner every day. Well, the pizza for dinner, that kind of sounds like a great idea. The Ninja Turtle in me is like, that's a great idea. Pizza for dinner every night. Okay, I can get on board with that. But fruit snacks for breakfast, we know it's wrong. We know it's not right. But just because something doesn't feel right doesn't mean that it's wrong. The reality is we need to be able to coexist with people that disagree with us. We have to be able to have a dialogue with people of different faiths, even partnering with people where there's opportunities, fighting for the rights of others to practice their religious beliefs is a good thing. So don't misunderstand me. See, we want to be able to fight for people to believe what they believe. That's a good, solid truth. We should be able to stand up for somebody that because they what they believe, they have the right to do that. We want to defend their right to believe what they believe and work with them towards similar goals in the world. God has given common grace to all people, and there are values and desires that we all universally share. And we as Christians need to work together with others to bring about good things in this world. There's a philosopher, John Stackhouse, he says that we as Christians, we often fail at times to bring about peace and justice in the world because we do not see that at least for one issue or another issue, there's an occasion where Muslims and Mormons and Marxists might be able to fight for common goals for a same plan. That might happen. That might be a legitimate thing, and we just don't see it because we don't always interact with people of other faiths and other religions. Our culture assumes that if my beliefs are different or even critical of something that you do believe or want to believe, that we just can't tolerate one another. And that's not the case. We can have relationships with people. We can have those conversations with people that are real and loving and caring. Just because we don't agree on things doesn't mean that we can't get along. There's an idea of cultural pluralism. And cultural pluralism says, I will defend your right to believe what you believe. And this is a good idea. This is an idea we should push towards. Cultural pluralism is an idea that we should be able to defend someone's right to believe what they believe. But what the danger is, what the concept is after that, it's not logically possible. We move to a metaphysical pluralism. And I start to believe that even though I've defended you, now I start to believe that if I'm going to defend you, everything must be true too. I start to believe that what you believe is also true. So what I believe and what you believe, if it's, it just is true. It's always true. It's all true. We can't move to that mindset because it's not logically possible. It's a logical impossibility that everything could be right. It just can't happen. If I'm getting ready in the morning and I put on a pair of socks and my wife notices, hey, you put on a pair of socks. And my son says, no, he didn't put on socks because he's three and he might have that argument where he just might say, no, you didn't put on socks just to be silly. They both can't be right. I can't say, well, you're both right and then walk out the door. It doesn't work that way. One of them is wrong and it's not going to be my wife. I've got socks on. That's just the way it is. And so two things, two opposites, cannot be true at the same time. They can't be true at the same time. I have a really good friend of mine, one of my best friends in the world. So I've got several good friends that have been through there for me through good times and bad times. And I've got this one friend who, when I was preaching at a church in Essex, I lived in the parsonage of the church, and I was invited to like these little backyard barbecues, and I was hanging out with him, and his wife and kids used to come to my church, but he didn't, because his beliefs were different. He didn't believe that what we were preaching was right. He believes that, you know, Christians only believe in Christ because they haven't studied anything else. And that's kind of the idea that he believes, that religions who only believe that they're the right ones, they haven't studied anything else, because if they did, their minds would be opened to other things. And so this guy doesn't come to the church, but I was invited to his yard, and we're hanging out in the backyard, and there's a couple other people from the church there, and we're all hanging out, and he offers me a beer, and it kind of goes silent because he offers the pastor a beer, and I accepted it, which threw him off. And I think he went to the cooler and got it as quickly as he could before I could change my mind. And he hands me my beer, and we're just hanging out. And all of a sudden, this started a friendship between the two of us, where we were talking about a lot of different things. And it got to the point where I would text him, or he would text me. It'd be late at night, and we would just go B-I-F with a question mark, beer in the field. And so we would meet. I'd walk halfway across the field. He'd walk halfway across the field. We'd each have two beers in hand, one for him, one for me. We'd try these new craft beers that we were all trying. And we would stand there and talk about anything under the stars, like anything. We would talk about all kinds of stuff. We'd talk about religion. We would talk about the weather. We would talk about other things. If it ever got a little dicey or a little tense, we usually just backed off a little bit. But he's the guy that, he's older than me, and he likes to come alongside me and fix my problems. And so generally that comes, it gets a little tense sometimes. But we had a good relationship, a great friendship. And when I needed somebody, when I lost my job and I didn't know what to do, my wife called him and said, "Your friend needs you." And he was there within minutes. We didn't share the same belief system, but he was there for me. We don't agree on everything, but he was there for me. And then years later, after him and his family had moved and things were going bad for him, do you know who he called? Me. Because he knew I was there for him. We don't agree, but we love each other deeply. We were even hanging out this Friday, and there was a disagreement between the two of us, and we talked it out a little bit, and we just agreed that we were both not gonna get to a point where we said we were both right. We don't agree, and it's just part of that relationship. But we love each other deeply, and we've been there for each other so many times. Cultural pluralism says, "I will defend your right to believe what you believe." But that metaphorical pluralism is when we start to say, well, everybody must be true. Everything must be true. Because we don't want to have an argument. We don't want to debate. We don't want to look like we're not tolerant of you. But that's not where we need to go. Because two opposite things can't be true at the same time. It just cannot happen. There's a story in Scripture. You see, anytime we're going to talk about anything that's tough or anything that's here at the church, we're never going to just turn to our own words. I'm never just going to stand up here and tell you my own thoughts, my own beliefs, and leave it there. Because we're always going to point back to Jesus. And in our other sermons in this series, we've looked at, you know, who Jesus was and the sacrifice he needed to make, and is the Bible real and accurate? And we've looked at those things already, and we're always going to point back to Jesus every time and say, what does Jesus say here? And so he talks about it. Jesus talks about what it means. And so there is a verse in the Bible, and Jesus is talking in John chapter 14. He's leading up to everything that's going to happen. His death is about to happen. Everything that he's lived up for is happening now. And it's all building and building and building. He's telling his disciples he's about to leave them. This is in John chapter 14. If you grabbed one of the Bibles in the back, it's page 508. And we have this whole story of him, you know, predicting his death, predicting the things that were going to come, predicting people going to deny him. And he gathers his disciples and he wants to encourage them. And in encouraging them, he says, you know, I'm about to leave you, but don't be worried. Don't be distressed. Don't be discouraged. I'm about to leave, but I'm going somewhere to prepare a place for you. Because if it weren't so, I would have told you, and I'm going somewhere where you'll join me. And they were like, well, just show us this place. And he's like, if you know me, you know this place. And they're like, just show me the Father. And he says, if you know me, you know the Father. And it comes down to this one line where he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And in a moment of encouraging his disciples, he draws a line in the sand that we still struggle with. because there's so many other thoughts and ideas and good people out there. And we just wrestle with this of like, is that real? Is that right? And Jesus lies it out in the sand and says, no one comes to the Father except through me. And people look at this and they think, this is not tolerant. This is not great. But let me lay it out for you. Christianity is not alone in being exclusive. Islam is exclusive. It teaches there's one God, Allah, and he had his prophet Muhammad. There's a heaven that's a paradise, and there's a hell for those who oppose Allah. If you reject the teachings of Muhammad, you go to hell. It's exclusive. And there's a lot of other religions that are exclusive. Buddhist is not known as being an exclusive religion because it's all about peace and being together. But in reality, Buddhism started from someone walking away from the Hindu faith saying, they don't have it right, I need to have it right, I need to do it this way. And there's other religions, Sikhism started because they said Buddhism isn't right and Hinduism isn't right and we're gonna pull too. And we see it within our own churches, we pull apart because somebody doesn't have it right. There is all kinds of people and religions and faith groups that claim exclusivity. It's not just the Christian church. There's been a lot of other rebellions. There's been a lot of other thought processes. There's been a lot of other faith groups that are still active today. And to say that they're all true would almost be a bigger insult than saying that one is true. Because you're telling all these people that one day they're all just going to be together in some collective paradise and it's going to be okay. But they have family members and people that have died for their beliefs and what they think and what they know. I feel like it'd be even more offensive to say, oh yeah, everybody's right. No one has exclusive rights. We wrestle with this in our life. When I was 16, my half-brother died of cancer. And this was a rough time in our family. We got together and there was a lot of grief and there was a lot of sorrow and there was a lot of frustration because he had just had a baby. He was 30 and he had his first kid. And this all stirred up in me when I was then 30 and had my first kid and thinking about my half-brother passing away at that same age. It stirred so much in me. I'll never forget my dad breaking down and grabbing him and crying. My dad, who never cries, you know, old school guys guy. Weeping hysterically. And I don't know what my brother believed about Jesus because we never had that talk. We didn't grow up in the same house, so I know that he didn't have the same exact upbringing as I did. And lots of people from that side of my family are not. They don't believe in Jesus. I went to a different funeral only a few years ago, and the people in that side of my family, aunts and uncles of my family, were heckling the priest when he talked about heaven, heckling him when he talked about joy and hope. And that's the side of that family that my half-brother is connected to, and I don't know his relationship with Jesus. And I remember as a 16-year-old kid standing there believing that Jesus is the only way, believing the Bible to be true, because this is what I believe with my whole heart, standing there saying, I just don't know if he believed. And there's no other word than to say it sucks because it's turmoil, it's tension. Because there's a level of what I believe to be wholeheartedly true means that I might not see my brother ever again. But just because it doesn't feel right doesn't mean that it's wrong. It doesn't. And when we grieve, we usually go to those questions more and more, don't we? When we grieve, that's when we hit those points where we just get to the end and we're like, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't set well with me. And there's a part in Jesus's life where he wrestled with that too. You see, the same guy that is Jesus, that's God's son, that's going to sacrifice himself so that we can have a relationship with God that said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. When he's in the garden, so there's a moment in his life and story leading up to his death, in Mark chapter 14, page 480 in those Bibles in the back, we have Jesus having his last supper with his disciples in communion, which we will celebrate that together today as a church. We celebrate that still. He has that last supper with them. He goes off to pray with them in the Garden of Gethsemane. And when he does that, he takes his disciples and he leaves some of them here. He tells them to pray. He takes a couple more in a little further and he leaves them here and he tells them to pray. And he goes in by himself even further. And he prays, and he feels the weight of being the only way. And I know this to be true because what he says in his prayer, and he says, Mark chapter 14, verse 36, he says, Abba, Father, everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but you will. In other words, God, everything is possible. You could make another way. Make something else work so that this isn't the only thing. Make something else work so that I don't have to do this. Make something else work. Take this from me. And he says, not my will, but yours be done. And he goes on from there to continue to the path. He dies for our sins. He goes on to raise from the dead so that we can have salvation through him and have a relationship with God. But to think that it's an easy thing to just say, it's the only way, that's it. Suck it up. It didn't even set quite well, or it doesn't seem like it even set quite well with Jesus in the garden. If there's any other way, if there's any other way, and there wasn't. There was no other way. He continued his path, he continued his journey, and that is where we have salvation and grace. You see, we sacrifice answers to eternally significant questions in the pursuit of social peace, of social order. We say, we're not going to talk about these ultimate things because ultimately we want just to have peace and we just want to be together and sing kumbaya and we're all going to be just good. And is it worth it? I'll tell you, 16-year-old me standing there over my brother's casket would question, is it worth it? Me standing here in front of you, I say, it absolutely is. That Jesus is the way. We see it through his life. We see it through the Bible. We see it in front of us. That doesn't mean we can never interact with people that don't believe what we believe, but it does also not mean that we just say everything is true. And we might never have peace about this. We might always struggle with it. We might always have that same tension. God, is there any other way? Is there any other way? We might pray that same prayer. But the answer is always going to be the same. No, there's no other way. Would you pray with me?